This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
City of Gary is getting ready to put into place its first bike and pedestrian master plan. Let's find out more about it. Deb Backus is with the Redevelopment Department at Gary City Hall, and she's with us to talk about it. And Deb, thank you for being with us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's an interesting project that is underway here, and it's nice to know at least the City of Gary put some real interesting things in place, especially with taking over the idea of making the entire city as well as bicycle-friendly, but more pedestrian-friendly. Tell us about some of the thoughts that helped lead to this point for the master plan.
We were very fortunate to apply for a grant from the Indiana State Department of Health last December, before the new administration came in place. The vision is a division called the Nutrition and Physical Activity. So there's a focus on health and activity and physical activity. We were awarded that grant this past late summer. It's a grant that provides $20,000 from the Indiana State Department of Health. And then there's a 50-50 match. The Redevelopment Commission of the City of Gary provided the additional $20,000. And the intent is that the funds there go to hiring a consultant or a consulting team to help us put together a robust bicycle and pedestrian master plan for the city.
What were some of the thoughts coming to this point before, of course, you've got the funding, but ideas that had come up maybe before in City Hall, or for that matter, when Mayor Prince might have been campaigning for mayor, and some or city council members, for that matter, too, campaigning for their positions, that they got from citizens saying that we need to do something like this?
Yep. We've got a really strong foundation and very strong hints as to what the citizens wanted for their city in the process of going through the comprehensive plan from 2018 to 2019 that had a very robust community engagement and almost grassroots level thinking about what we needed to do with the comprehensive plan. And many of the suggestions that came to the fore, and the comprehensive plan hence reflects this, is the notion that people did want safer ways to move around, to get to transit, bike lanes to allow them get out and exercise, or to allow them to an alternative means of transportation to get to their jobs, get to the grocery store, get to church. So the comprehensive plan then laid the groundwork for how to proceed here, or at least provided a set of options that the citizens can further weigh in on, because this project will be heavily focused on community engagement and hearing whether, in fact, what we put in the comprehensive plan with regard to transportation, bicycle, pedestrian ideas, whether that's confirmed by citizens across every district, every neighborhood in the city to move forward. So a couple of things that have been going on for a while behind the scenes and are reflected in the comprehensive plan are the notion of connecting a set of trail sections across the entire city of Gary on the northern edge of Gary into what's called the Marquette Trail system, which is intended to go all the way from the city of Chicago to New Buffalo, Michigan, continuously. So each city across northwest Indiana is putting together their pieces. For Gary's piece, we have a piece that goes from County Line Road to Grand Avenue in the Miller neighborhood, which is already in place, has been in place for a couple of years. There's a section we're working on right now between Grand Boulevard and Lake Street in the Miller neighborhood. Lake Street is where the National Park Service's Douglas Center is. That we're working on, and that should come into play in a couple of years, the implementation. And then there's a section that'll go between Lake Street and Broadway, that's farther out in the planning process. There's a section that's already in place between Broadway and Polk Street. We're working on a section to get that in place in the next couple of years between Polk Street and Roosevelt. And then there's a section already done between Roosevelt and the far edge of the western edge of the city of Gary. So that's one example that provides for, once we get all those pieces connected, wonderful connectivity not just for citizens of Gary, moving across our city, going from neighborhood to neighborhood, enjoying the view as you cycle through the National Park and cycle along the Grand Calumet River, but also it connects us to visitors and the region and folks wanting to see the wonderful things we've got in Gary and the natural resources we've got in Gary. That's one example I can provide you.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that a lot of the ideas that not only come from citizens, but maybe some encouragement from people at NERPC, since there is this extensive transportation plan, and that includes bicycling and trails, that a lot of the ideas maybe or encouragement for these ideas come from them?
Yes, most definitely. The city works quite closely on bicycle and pedestrian in particular with Mitch Barloga at NERPC and thinks through each time a funding opportunity comes through NERPC what piece we're going to put in place, how we're going to advance bike and pedestrian activities. So there's a very close relationship there. In particular, there's a kind of long-range vision that has come about through connections with NERPC and a larger group of kind of people, including the city and a number of nonprofit organizations and others connected to bicycle and ped, with regard to potentially putting a trail, which would be called the Gary L, because it's would be along an elevated old railroad bed. Mm-hmm. It goes through the Midtown area. And basically would connect the city in a different way. Instead of the Marquette Trail, which would go across the northern edge, this would go through the heart of the city, the Midtown area in particular, going past cultural, historic kind of features. It's something that's kind of akin to if you heard about the 606 in Chicago or the Cultural Trail in Indianapolis or the High Line in New York City. They're very transformative projects that are putting kind of bicycle and pedestrian friendly access in place with having in mind the notion of economic development, because you're lifting up neighborhoods by putting this very visible, very inspirational kind of trail through their area. So that's an example of something we've been working on diligently at the ground level stages, and we'll certainly be looking for robust feedback from the community as we share with them these visions that have been put forth in the past that NERPC have been extremely instrumental in.
Now, Deb, I imagine that a lot of these ideas probably come from the fact that we know that the city of Gary is physically a very large city, but because of the way the population has scattered out over the years, because of neighborhoods that have disappeared, and it's kind of spread like pockets of residents. And so this is an easier way of reconnecting everybody, reconnecting neighborhoods, I suppose, by this type of transportation, rather than building a lot of big highways that may, say, go from Miller all the way to the southwest side of town.
That's absolutely correct. And let me provide a little bit more context, too. So we've got a very large city, almost more than 50,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. But we've also got the characteristic of our community and the demographics of our community really do beg for alternative transportation options. 19% of Gary's households do not own a car. They need to rely on to get to their jobs, to get to school, to get to grocery stores, to get to church. They have to rely on safe ways to move about. So the bike and ped panel will be instrumental, hopefully, in gathering ideas from those neighborhoods that where, in fact, transportation in vehicles, which are typically far more robust than other more financially sound communities. Here we really have that challenge. Transportation, we've got a great transit system in Gary, the GPTC. Mm-hmm. There, the issue is that it's a wonderful system, but anyone who wants to use transit has to be able to safely get from their home to the transit stop is nearest to them. There's a concept in transit lingo of first mile, last mile. It's the notion that once you get on the bus, you're fine. You're following transit and you're getting from where you want to go to nearby, where you want to go nearby.
Right.
But the whole process is you need to get to your home, to the stop that you embark time. And then once you get to the other end, generally you have to walk or bike to get to the destination you're going to, because we don't have bus stops absolutely everywhere. So that's another piece where really thinking through where the greatest needs are, where we can make streets, sidewalks, put in bike lanes safer to connect people to transit, so that people in Gary can get around to anywhere they need to go, as well as connect them from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Now, Deb, what kind of timetable are you looking at in working on the master plan and being able to turn this over so that the Gary Common Council will have a chance to look at it, may sign off on it, and get some of these projects officially going?
We've got a pretty aggressive timeline. Mm-hmm. We hope to wrap up the project by June of 2021. At the moment, we spent up until now, mm-hmm. We started August 14th, so the last month or two, really setting the stage for robust community engagement, getting our project website up. That project website is easy to remember. It's called reinvestingary, all one word, .org. And there you can find a wealth of information, including another piece that we spent a good amount of time putting together, which is a community online survey, where if you go to reinvestingary.org, right smack in the beginning of every one of the pages, you'll see a button to get to that survey. That survey is framed in a manner that is really kind of very friendly. You've got to have a computer, although we will be providing paper copies of it to those who don't have that option. And we'll also hopefully be putting together locations where, perhaps at the library,
right,
where
mm-hmm.
people could come in and use a computer in the library that brings them directly to that survey. The survey allows community residents across the entire city to tell us about whether they walk and bike. If they don't, what are the obstacles? What's keeping them from doing that? Is it because there's too much traffic, that they don't feel safe walking the sidewalks, that the sidewalks are broken up, that the lighting isn't good enough, that there are no crosswalks? There's a whole set of obstacles that they can rank and say, here's what really is stopping me from moving about by bicycle and pedestrian means. It allows them to tell us a little bit more about themselves. Do you have a car? Do you have a bicycle? And where would you go if, in fact, there were safer routes? Would you walk to the grocery store? Would you walk to church? Do you have the ability to walk to your job?
Mm-hmm.
Would it make it easier for you to get to transit, that first mile, last mile? And then we've got embedded in there as well a map where you can zone into your neighborhood and actually physically kind of take little icons and say, here's where my starting point is. And where I'd really like to go by walking or biking is, let's say I live at 9th and Connecticut, and I really like to walk to Buffington Park, which is not that far away.
Right.
But you can put an obstacle there and say, but here's a real problem. The sidewalks are really broken up here, or there aren't sidewalks that are continuous. And put that right on the map for us so we know exactly where there are problems that need to be fixed. Similarly, they want to bike to the railcast for a baseball game. There it might be that there's no crosswalk for you to get across Fifth Avenue, a very busy, busy street. So you can basically let us know where you'd like to go, where the obstacles are, and what you'd like to fix. And then you've also got the option to just kind of give us a sense for what your vision is. So we're really excited about that and very interested in making sure that every citizen has got access to that, every neighborhood is represented in that survey, and really kind of chew on then what comes back from the citizens in terms of putting that into a draft plan for the public to digest in public meetings we'll be having. So our timeline is right now we had our first advisory committee meeting last week. So we've got a group of leaders that represent recreation, health, housing, social services, transit, who all are going to come, not only help us kind of get the word out, but also give us really sound advice on what we need to be thinking about where we can get additional data to really understand our starting point here and where we need to go. Our first public meeting will be sometime in early December. We'll have another community advisory committee in December. By February, we'll have another public meeting and another community advisory committee meeting. If all goes well, by March, we'll have kind of the draft plan available, have another public meeting to have the public weigh in and the community advisory committee weigh in. And then if all goes smoothly, we're hoping to adopt by the Common Council in April. If that doesn't happen, it'll be May or June. So that's the timeline.
Well, Deb, thank you very much for all this great information. A lot of great projects that are underway, all tied together because of this work on the Comprehensive Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. And I hope citizens do take advantage of the fact they can fill out the survey however they do it, whether it's online or whether it's by pen and pencil or paper, and get the information back in so that you and the other officials there in the Redevelopment Department and the committees can get to work and get all these things added in. We appreciate you spending time today.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. We're really excited about the input we'll be getting from the community to put together a plan that really does meet the needs of all the citizens across Gary. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Deb Backus is with the City of Gary Redevelopment Department. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Looking into the world of nature, you think about some things that might be near-death experience for some creatures. Being run over by a car is not, though, a near-death experience for the diabolical ironclad beetle. How the beetle survives has, in turn, got some research that's underway into how some new materials might be developed that we humans could possibly use. That research is underway at Purdue University and other campuses, and we're talking now with Purdue University a professor of civil engineering, Pablo Zavattieri. And Professor Zavattieri, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Tell us how the discussion finally got started amongst yourselves, your colleagues, and the engineers at UC Irvine, and how they've decided that maybe that the ironclad beetle might be a good way to take a look at some new designs for how we live.
Yeah, so it was known that this ironclad beetle was kind of tough. You see that in the traditionally, people talk about that also in the north of Mexico, South California. People already knew that these beetles were tough and it was really hard to run over a car by a car. So part of our research is to actually look at nature in general. So the beetle is one of the species we are studying. We look at other, marine creatures like mantis shrimp, seashells. But the beetle was very interesting because of that, history. People were talking about it. So one of the graduate students actually did that test to run over by a car and see that it didn't die. We also did the control test with another beetle, and it died. So from that point of view, we just say, I think we need to actually look at that from the material science point of view. And we took it to the lab. We did some mechanical tests. We did some microscopy analysis. And, kind of that started probably 5 years ago. We started looking into what characteristics of the material actually make this material so tough so that we can use it for engineering materials. Mm-hmm. But that's how all started.
Did the discovery that these ironclad beetles are probably some of the toughest creatures known to nature, and in particular because you could just about run over them with a vehicle and they'd still be alive, are there some things about the structure of the armor that the beetle has that has made it so interesting to see if it could be replicated on a larger scale for humans?
Yeah, so sometimes actually comes from comparison. So we typically take the beetle, this is a terrestrial beetle, so it doesn't fly. So we compare it with the flying beetle, and we know that the structure is much thicker, which makes it like a good armor for the beetle. But also what was interesting is that apparently, many million years ago, that beetle was flying. So at some point in the evolution process, stopped flying. And they have some kind of cover, right? So the exoskeleton covers the elytra, which is basically part of the exoskeleton that protects the wings. Mm-hmm. So for the flying beetles, they actually open it up, they deploy the wings, they can fly, and then, they close it again. This terrestrial beetle doesn't do that, but it still keeps the same shape of those covers. And basically what we found is that the way they are connected, they use some kind of jigsaw puzzle. So, they don't need to open it anymore. So it's actually locked there. And that provides a lot of strength and toughness, right, for any kind of external load, so like a predator or a rock falling. That actually protects the beetle. But it was interesting to actually see that it has the shape of the typical interlocking mechanisms that we use in jigsaw puzzle or many other applications. So we took a look at that, and we found that there are many other mechanisms that actually are active during the deformation process. You know, that takes, microscope analysis. We did computational models. We did 3D printing models to actually capture what that interlocking does. But it was very interesting to actually see that it uses that jigsaw puzzle kind of shape.
Do we find, and you've probably discovered this in some of the research that you and your colleagues have worked on this, that it's this unusual shape of panels or blades or how, I guess, however you wish to put it. You mentioned they're like pieces of puzzle. Are we finding that these are some use for such larger things that we humans use, like putting together gas turbines, for example, for a jetliner?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we struggle in engineering to actually connect different materials with dissimilar properties. For example, I work in the automotive industry, so that it was very hard to actually glue together a panel of fiberglass composites with aluminum, for example, or steel. So when you actually have materials that are so different, it's very hard to connect them. You use adhesive joints, we use rivets, bolts, screws. But at the end of the day, they are not really as effective as we found here in nature. We found that these plates that are part of the jigsaw puzzle shape are actually deforming in a way that helps the energy dissipation process. So it really makes something that is kind of brittle, like ceramic, behave more like tactile material, like a paper clip. Right? Mm-hmm. When you deform it, it deforms, but it doesn't break. So this is basically what this architecture of the exoskeleton of the beetle actually does.
Now, we mentioned here about the fact that they find ways to be able to, for aerospace purposes, to be able to put together better kinds of fasteners and the like. And I understand that you and your colleagues at Purdue have done some loading tests on a certain type of fastener that seems very similar to this kind of composition that the ironclad beetle has. And what kind of results have you found from that?
Yeah, so we look at these joints. So we joined a piece of aluminum or steel, it was metal, with composites. And we did a test here where we look at the same kind of architecture that we found in the beetle. And then we compare it with the fasteners that we use, in aerospace. And we found that this new mechanism doesn't really, it doesn't sacrifice the strength, but improves the toughness. The toughness is basically associated with the energy that is required to actually break the joint. And so we found that there is a large improvement of toughness without sacrificing the strength. And that's basically what nature does all the time, right? It tries to improve one property without sacrificing the other properties.
Now, Professor Zavattieri, have you found not only the work for the research so far, but are there any other points that you and your research colleagues, both at Purdue and also out of state, are looking into as part of this?
So we are looking at other species as well, as I mentioned before. So the beetle is only one possibility, right? But we also look at the mantis shrimp. Kind of very similar to the lobster that can actually punch and break shells under the sea, under the water. So we are looking into that. We also look at hoof and horns from some animals because they are really tough. We look at a scale of some fish that are very strong. Like there are some huge fish that live in the Amazon with piranhas. So they actually have to develop some strong armor to survive the piranhas. So those materials are actually, all these are really, really good examples from nature where we take one material at a time, we take it to the microscope, we take it to the lab, we do mechanical tests, and then we try to, devise what are the architectural characteristics of the material under the microscope that actually make this material tougher. So those are the things that we are doing, and we are going to just keep doing it with other materials. So the good thing about nature is that there are so many species that are available to study, and every single week we actually find a group of biologists somewhere that actually discovers something new, and that's where we want to go as engineers to actually see how those materials work.
We're talking with Pablo Zavattieri. He is a civil engineering professor at Purdue University. In fact, he is Purdue's Jerry M. and Linda T. Engelhardt Professor of Civil Engineering. And he and his colleagues, including colleagues in California at the UC Irvine campus, have been working on research looking into the strength of the coating or the shell of the ironclad beetle and how it might be replicated for us to be able to use for other very strong purposes. Thank you very much, Professor Zavattieri, for joining us.
Thank you.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we have conversations with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer with some holiday financial planning tips that can be brought up with family members, and also a conversation with Digital Crossroads Center creator and Northwest Indiana native Tom Dockich about the new facility that has just opened up along the Lake Michigan front in Hammond.